to Resettled Radio, brought to you by the ARCC, live on Planet FM.
Stay tuned for current affairs, conversation, interviews, music and more,
as we explore the perspectives and stories from resettled communities,
and bring you information from within the resettlement sector.
Welcome to Resettled Radio and thanks for being with us today. Waiheke Island's Sculpture on the Gulf Festival came to an end last Sunday. The festival is internationally renowned, and this year one of the featured works was a piece by Tiffany Singh in collaboration with the ARCC titled The Journey of a Million Miles Starts with One Step, The Stories of Beyond Refuge. Regular listeners to Resettled Radio will have heard some of the Beyond Refuge stories as we've played them over the last month or so on the program. Producer and host Gutluak Chol headed to Waiheke the week before the festival ended to speak with a number of people involved in the project. We'll play those interviews for you today, and we'll also be bringing you the first part of an interview with Ibrahim Ali, who you may have heard on this program before, with an in-depth look at what's happening in Somalia, where they've recently appointed new president Mohamed Abdullah Mohamed. So that's coming up on the show today, as well as some great music. But first to Waiheke, where Gutluak caught up with one of the celebrated New Zealanders that read for Beyond Refuge, entertainer Frankie Stevens.
My name is Gutluak from ARCC. Can you tell the listeners what your name?
My name is Frankie Stevens. I am a singer, sometimes actor, and entertainer.
Your voice is telling me.
It's been self-made over a lot of years.
That's what people, because we play these stories over the radio, and people from the community are saying, has he gone for training for that?
The story that I had the pleasure of reading was very emotional. Very emotional, very strong. And I enjoyed the experience. And a lot of the stories are very similar of refugees who first came to New Zealand. It's fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, because from the way you read it, it's not just somebody reading the history, but, you know, you have a passion for it. You have taken it seriously.
Oh, absolutely. You can't read a story like that and not take it seriously. It's, some people would read that story and then think, oh, it's not true, it's not real. But it's not a movie script.
I know.
It could be a movie script. It's real. It's somebody's life from a young boy right up to his present age. And you can't help but be emotional.
I know, when you read the story, did you know the owner of that story, the person who have the story?
I'd never met him. I saw his picture. Tiffany Singh sent me his picture, just so I could see, see who it was. I'd never read his story until I was given it, and I read it and I looked at him, and I thought, wow, you're a very powerful person to experience all that pain, loss, and come out the other side stronger, and come out the other side a good person.
Yes.
You know, somebody that doesn't resent his lot in life.
Yeah.
Somebody who's turned his life into a positive.
Yeah.
You know, yes. And that's a lesson for all New Zealanders,
yeah,
and anybody who comes across that story. It's a lesson on how you look at life and how you get on with it.
I know.
And stop being sorry for yourself.
Yeah.
And it's just beautiful.
Beautiful, beautiful. So when you first read the couple of pages, what was going on in your mind about the journey of this person?
Well, just the fact that the strength that he found in every situation that he was in. He didn't give up. He looked for ways to get out of the situation he was in. I mean, he was in prison for 5 years, I think it was, at one stage.
And he did not do anything wrong?
No, he didn't do anything wrong. And he came through that. I mean, most people would come out hardened criminals of that kind of system, but not at all. Once again, he used that episode in his life as a positive, and he re-educated himself and looked for ways to better himself.
And the funny part of it is, you know, in life, people are happy when they go home.
Mm.
But in our situation as refugees, you are happy when you are leaving.
You couldn't go home.
You couldn't go home.
Yes, and I mean, the positive thing about it now is that he's ended up in New Zealand, which originally is not where he wanted to be.
Yeah.
And that's got to be natural. That's normal. But now, if you ask him what he thinks about New Zealand, he loves New Zealand. He's grown to love the country, the people, the differences in people. He's learning. He's learning Māori culture. He respects that, which, from my perspective, I'm half Māori, half Scottish. So for me to see that, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Multiculturalism.
Culture, multicultural. I mean, for many years it was bicultural here in New Zealand, Māori and Pāpia.
Yes.
Now the culture is turned around, where you have ethnicities from all over the world.
Yeah.
And some people would say they don't like it. Well, tough. You know, get used to it.
Yeah, get used to it.
Because that is the way of the world, and it is the new New Zealand.
When the war broke out, so I ended up in USA, and my family ended up here.
Mm.
And then I live in Tennessee for 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just came last year.
Yep.
And then when I compare the life in Tennessee and the life here, completely different.
Oh, totally different.
Because this is what I've been telling people, the face of the world is in New Zealand. Mm.
You're in Tennessee, is south.
It's south.
In the south of America, you know. My sister... married an American black man, and they're living in the south at the moment. He was a basketball player, very good one too. Lived in New Zealand many years, so they'll be coming back next year because he prefers living here.
Yeah.
He's looked upon totally different here.
Yeah, different.
Overall. Than he is in the south.
I'm the example because I should not leave Tennessee just to go far away because there's something here. There's something unique in New Zealand.
I think there is. Yeah. I think overall, people are good people.
Yeah,
and they will give you a chance.
They give you a chance, and everybody's here. They don't care where you come from. You know, you are part of the community. Very welcome.
In Māori terms, Māori originally came from Hawaiki Nui Pāmamao, Hawaii. And they came down many centuries ago, and they came down in the Waka and ended up in Aotearoa, the land of the long white cloud. So everybody comes from somewhere.
And then they ended up.
Originally. And they ended up here. So, yes. Beautiful. So welcome to New Zealand.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Kia ora.
Hi, my name is Galuak from Rosetta Radio. Here in Auckland, can you tell me your name? What do you do?
My name's Sarah, and I'm a sculptor in the Gulf, and I'm from Melbourne University, and I've had the great privilege of being involved with Tiffany Thing's artwork, and I'm looking at certain art environments, and in particular, non-formal learning environments and how places like Sculpture in the Gulf becomes a non-formal learning environment for lots of people.
That's beautiful. Before you were involved in this, did you hear anything about ARCC at all?
No, it wasn't until I started working with Tiffany that I found out about it.
What was your first reaction?
I was, as the stories came on in the first time when the boats were connected and the stories started to come out of the boats, I was just really amazed but also really taken aback about how little I understood or I knew of other people's stories of becoming New Zealanders. Yes, over time, because I thought I knew a lot, but I didn't.
That's what they say. They say if you want to know more, talk to people who come from different places, because they have something unique.
Absolutely. And I've learned a lot just in the last few weeks. Yeah. Yes, it's been amazing.
So when this story was, I read the story. I mean, I was part of the story writing. I wrote them. And the first thing was, you know, that I'm in touch with these people because I've gone through all some of this. And, you know, because when you come from where there's a war, you lost a lot of friends. I lost quite a few and family members. And sometimes you are tempted to, you know, when there's no life, nothing to eat, and life at risk, some people tempted to hate human flesh. They do. I know some people who did that just to survive, though they didn't make it. So when I saw those stories, these memories came back. Yeah. Sometimes when I'm in the interview room with these people, sometimes, you know, we cry together. So when I saw them here, it's very amazing. So when you see the when you read the stories, what first came to your mind?
I just felt really, I had a gush of compassion. You know what I mean? I was just like, wow. And also how little, because I live in Australia, and in Australia, the government has a very, very severe attitude towards people seeking refuge in that country, and, you know, families and children and everything, they get taken off to Manus Island or Christmas Island, and the human rights abuses are just as shameful. It's the country's biggest shame. And so it just, you know, it made me really sad that our politicians can't feel that compassion themselves. And why is it that we need to be, you know, I almost feel like we need to hit them over the head with sticks so they'll listen.
Yeah, because some countries don't act the same. I'm originally from South Sudan, and Australia has taken a lot of South Sudanese people. So compared to what the government of Australia is doing to former refugees, I can say it's okay. Then the countries that refuse to bring them, you know, because a different kind of treatment. Maybe on the process they will understand.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. There's a lot of people on the ground in Melbourne trying to change the conversation. And there's this really beautiful campaign called I Came By Boat. And it was crowdfunded. And we crowdfunded a whole lot of bus shelters and things. And there were portraits of people who came to Australia by boat 20, 30 years ago. And then they are all people that are quite revered in the community, and for them to get up and say, hey, I came by boat, was really a really brave thing to do, really political and also really beautiful, and it started to change the conversation. And I think, you know, artwork like Tiffany's does the same thing. It's inviting a change of heart, which I think is really important.
The idea when we were trying to come up with the history book, the idea was that some people stop you on the road. Hey, when did you come and what do you do? And, you know, try to connect things, you know. We say, okay, instead of telling the histories on the street, why don't we put them in the book and people will read? And this is like a civic education, you know. You are educating people. So to you, do you think this is a good idea to be continued? Because this is the first test. This is our first book. We just tried that. We didn't know whether that would be well received or not. We just tried that. But now we don't know the reaction, and we are trying to understand what is going on in the mind of those who have read and heard these stories.
I thought the photography book was
still under now.
Yes, I thought that was really compelling, because I'm a very visual person. I find pictures really speak to me. I also bought the the stories book, but I've listened to the stories, but because of it's been quite busy while I've been here, I needed time to read them. But I think that it's a really good idea. I think it would be good to do a children's version. So I brought a nephew and a niece here, and they were very interested. I think that they're not mature enough to deal with all the themes, and they wanted to know more, but it was hard to gauge what level of content to give them because they've lived such sheltered lives. And, you know, a lot of them have just seen that movie Lion, and they drew some connections with Lion as well. That was their kind of inroad. So I think that a children's version would also work really, really well.
That's a good idea, a good suggestion, because one of our staff suggested earlier that we might do a children's magazine.
Yeah, great idea. And even greater if you could get children to contribute to that. And,
that would be, that's a good idea to be taken, I think.
Really good project. Thank
you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you for the work you have done. Thank you.
You're on Resettled Radio, and if you've just joined us, that was Gadluak Chol, producer and regular host of this program on Waiheke Island last week, speaking to people involved in the Sculpture on the Gulf Festival, where Tiffany Singh's work, The Journey of a Million Miles Starts with One Step, The Stories of Beyond Refuge, was displayed. We just heard from Sarah, who's from Melbourne University and was involved in that project, and before that, New Zealand singer and entertainer Frankie Stevens, who was one of the voices recorded for the work. Shortly, we'll hear from director at the Sculpture of the Gulf Festival, Zara Stanhope. But first, here's a track from Hopetown Brown, who will be playing at the Waiheke Island Jazz Festival in April this year. This track is called The Demanding Blues.
Fill my cup, read my mood, hold your tongue, my food. Is what you need enough? Is what you got too much for you to bear? What you need enough? Is what you got too much for you to spare? Treat you kind, I can't help it, you say you don't mind. Mama failed to beat the devil out of my skin. She beat me high, beat me low, beat me in a way that it don't show, but Mama failed to beat the devil out of my skin. Is what you need enough? Is what you got too much for you to bear? What you need enough? Is what you've got too much for you to spare? Grit your teeth, lose your stand, close your eyes, put out your hand. Mama failed to beat the devil out of my skin. She beat me high, beat me low, beat me in a way that it don't show, but Mama failed to beat. Is what you need enough? Is what you got too much for you to bear? What you need enough? Is what you got too much for you to spare? What you need enough? Is what you got too much for you to bear? What you need enough? Is what you got too much for you to spare.
My name is Galwa Shul from Russell Radio. Can you tell me your name and what you do?
My name is Zara Stanhope, and I'm a director looking after the art at Headland Sculpture on the Gulf on Waiheke Island.
Waiheke Island, this is the talk of the town in in our communities today. I think they will be listening on Saturday afternoon. The storybook, what do you think?
Sorry, what was the question?
The history book. The stories, all these stories, you know, transcribed into audio. What do you think about that?
I think it's fantastic. I've seen so many people here listening to the stories in Tiffany Singh's work, spending a lot of time listening, really engaged with the stories. Some people getting very emotional about them, because some of them are very tough. But really coming away and telling us how fantastic it is to hear those stories and to understand about people in our community, what some people have been through to come here in their lives. And I think it's great to be able to raise awareness of people's journeys, people's histories, what their lives have involved, because we live in a very safe country in New Zealand, very middle class in a way. And most people have never had any experience of war or trauma, which many people have resettled and come to Auckland have been through for much of their lives. So for a lot of people, it's very surprising, and they listen and go on a journey of that person. And I think that's a fantastic thing, because for me, thinking about art, the way that art can open people's minds to other people across the world, people in our own community. So we're all here together, and all these things are going on all the time. And for people here to understand, or for visitors to come and hear these stories as well, it's very, very powerful. And I thank the people who told the stories, and I thank Tiffany for bringing them to Waiheke in her artwork for tens of thousands of people to listen to.
I think Tiffany did a lot of job, and everybody in the team, amazing. We don't know, as AICC, I don't know how we can thank you enough. I have no idea. The idea about the books, people stop you on the road. Hey, how are you doing? When did you come here? How do you like it? And yeah, where do you come from originally? And then when we sit down, we say, okay, these stories can be put together in a form of book to educate more people instead of one on the street. So this was the idea that this should be put together. This is the first story book we launched. And we don't know the reaction there. We don't know whether people like it, people don't like it, because we want to tell how we struggle, our struggle, the success, the downfalls, and all of those, you know, combined together. Even some who came here, they haven't settled yet. Some, they have settled way, way, way better than the others. Because in environment, people don't, it's different. People catch up with life easily, people still struggle. There are people who do not even speak English up now, and they have been here maybe for about 20 years. Yeah. And so we try to put this book together. So, In your own idea, do you think this project is so helpful?
I think it's a great idea, because this is how you document the stories. Otherwise, they may not appear. People may never hear them. So whether it takes the form of a hard copy book, or whether it's on a website, or whether we listen to it on the radio, however we hear those stories, I think it's fantastic, because it's about communication. And different people will hear them through different forms. Some will read them, some will listen, some will see the visual, maybe a visual picture, and understand more about those stories. And I think that's the really important thing.
we feel sad about that, the fact that we left the children out. Maybe we can... Yeah.
Something for the children next.
Maybe children magazine.
Yeah, and maybe the children could draw the stories themselves. They hear the stories and then they draw the stories. So it's for their own generation. Yeah. But also adults will love that too.
That was Zara Stanhope of the Waiheke Island Sculpture on the Gulf Festival, speaking to Resettled Radio's Gutluak Chol. Before that, we heard a track from Hopetown Brown called The Demanding Blues. Hopetown Brown will be playing at the Waiheke Island Jazz Festival in April, and we'll play another track from one of the other bands featured in that festival later in the show. But back to sculptures and to stories from Beyond Refuge. Here's Faisal, who was at the Sculpture Festival and whose story was read as part of the project.
Hi, my name is Gutluak. What is your name?
My name is Faisal Farghali.
Faisal, how here in Waiheke Island, how do you find it?
Oh, so beautiful. This is the first time for me to Waiheke Island, but it's so, so beautiful island.
My first time here too, especially when we come through the boat.
Yeah, exactly, that's what you say now. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing area in New Zealand. I prefer anyone who stay in New Zealand to come to see Waiheke Island and enjoy with the weather and the nature of this island. It's very beautiful.
And New Zealand is a very small country, and the way it is beautiful, man, you cannot even tell.
My friends told me before about this island. They are coming and spending the New Year here. I never thought that this is beautiful like this. When I see it now, I believe that it's so beautiful.
Yeah, even my idea was that the island would be just a lot of mountains and a lot of seasides and the birds. And that was the idea. But when I got in here, it's a whole complete thing, completely different.
Yeah, and you see that the farms of the grapes?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I love the grapes and the farm of it. And they have a very nice, beautiful wine around here.
Yeah.
If you want to enjoy the wines, come and test it here. And they were protected. In all New Zealand, they protect the thing. So in Waiheke Island, the whole island is protecting wine. And you can come enjoy and see the grapes, how they grow the grapes around the mountains. It's like a hills. The grapes planted in the hills. Very nice.
They do things in here. They do a lot of stuff in here. I think they say it's done every 2 years or what? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. They will do it next year, or maybe next the year after. The same things. This is one to gathering the people from around the world, and I'm very nice to see around a whole a different ethnics here in this island coming to see what the IRCC doing, and the IRCC do a very nice job. And you come and listen. If you are near the end of this one, you'll be in next Sunday. But if you wanna come and see it and listen to the stories of the people of the river background, former refugees, and you're going to enjoy the stories and the speakers. They will, I think so, they'll select the nice speakers and nice voices, ladies and different. His name, I think so, one of them here.
He's a friend.
Friend here, and very nice.
Talking about his stories, as someone who has a history in that history book, when you hear these stories in audio, what is your reaction?
The whole motions of the world suddenly coming into my mind.
That's how I felt.
And I feel that everything from the saying of the world, I feel it. Because I ran through this area before in the refugees, but my refugees background is different. I stay in my home and I stay in Kuala Lumpur and I have my business and everything. But when I listen to it, I feel like they are really have suffered so much, and now they are enjoying New Zealand and they are very happy to be here. This country is different than every other country around the world, like America, like Canada, like those people also, they are offer something good for them. But New Zealand is very nice.
We don't have money, but we have peace.
Yeah, This is the important thing. You have peace. You don't have money. You don't have peace. Yeah, my kids and my family is safe. This is a very important thing. I can leave my kids in the house. And I can let them go to anywhere by their own. Nobody gonna harm them. If any trouble happen to them around in the street, anyone coming around and help them. This is a very beautiful and peaceful country to live with your family in.
That's why I moved here from America.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. You spent 10 years down there?
10, 11 years, and then this man, Donald Trump, came. He does not want a mic, and then I ran away.
Yeah, he's a damn man. But I don't think so. His country like this. This is better than there.
Yeah.
You have the peace here.
Yeah. And
Myself are now 45 years. What's going to see more?
Yeah.
Let the kids enjoy.
We want peace, happiness.
Yeah.
Let happiness ring. You know, let happiness come in.
Yeah. And you see the people here when they meet us in the when we come to the Waiheke Island, it's very lovely people.
We get the warmest reception, by the way.
Very warm reception for us.
And concerning the history, some people suggest that you left the kids out. So you need to come up with a children magazine where the children can draw their stories in pictures so that the other kids can understand. Because now we target the old people, the adults, while we left out the kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you think this is a pretty good idea?
Yeah, I think so. It's a very good idea. Because the kids, they will understand each other through the drawing, what they draw. Yeah. Maybe you are the old man cannot understand, but they understand.
Yeah, they
because they are sit in one school and they are go the same syllabus in New Zealand. I think so they will understand what's happening inside the big ship. And ARCC going to do this thing or what we going to do?
I think because you and I, we are part of this, I think we will take a decision on that.
Yeah. And my daughter loves very much the drawing. She do a nice drawing sometimes, and this
she will be the first.
Last year she win the prize of the school for drawing because she draw something special like this, and I like it very much.
These are some of the kits we need. I think we're going to put that one because a lot of people now have demanded that we left kits out.
My son also draw something when the first year we come here. He draw something until now. I keep it in his room, and I made it in portrait and I bought it. It's different kind of thought.
Yeah,
when I see the picture, I see that's different lines in his thought because he's coming from. We are traveling from Sudan to Kuala Lumpur, and we stay in Kuala Lumpur for 4 years. And Kuala Lumpur is a good and nice. It's Malaysia is good and it's okay, but it's not safe.
Yeah, because you are refugee on the way.
Yeah. But there we live in a fantasy life. There, leave them, give them in a nice department, a nice condo, and everything. But if you go outside this area, if you go outside of your home, you know my wife. Even they go to the mall. They will hold her hand until they come. 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, they will hold her hand. But now they all say to her, we are going to the mall. Okay, guys, okay, kids, go. And they go to drink coffee and they move in around the...
And then
they come back.
Yeah, see? Yeah. That's the happiness we need.
Yeah. Huh? This is the most happiness you have in your life.
Leave the happiness.
Yeah.
That's what it is. You need to be happy.
When I told you now, he's drawing something. He mixed the thought background from Malaysia and here. When he come to New Zealand, he draw a very nice picture. And that's okay.
I think these are some of the things that will be incorporated into children's magazine.
Yeah.
I think we need to do that.
Yeah, inshallah. No problem.
Thank you, Faisal.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
bro.
Gutluck Chol speaking to Faisal. You're with Resettled Radio on Planet FM 104.6. We're moving now from Waiheke Island to Somalia, where the new president, Mohamed Abdullah Mohamed, was elected earlier this month. Gutluck caught up with our local Somalian correspondent, Ibrahim Ali, to get an in-depth perspective of the current situation.
My name is Ibrahim Ali. I'm from the Somali community here in New Zealand. So today we are covering a lot of topics about the refugees and what's happening in back home. So let us start.
That's good. Thank you, Ibrahim. Today, let's talk about Somalia. I think from past week, a lot of big stories emerged from Somalia. Yeah. People are happy. People are jumping, dancing, or celebrating. Yep. A lot of good news over there. So we don't know whether that good news will last long or will not last long. We don't know. So let's talk about Somalia. There's this new guy in town, and his name is Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed. That's the new guy now in Somalia. He has taken over. So he was elected as the president of Somalia. I think this is the most democratic election in, I cannot say in Somalia, maybe in East Africa. You know, yeah, from the war zone to the most democratic election.
Wow.
That's a big thing.
It's a big thing.
That's a big thing. Yeah. So this guy, people are asking, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Because the guy came from nowhere and then, boom, just popped up.
Yeah.
So they don't know where he come from. Mm-hmm. He was not one of the warlords. He was not even the, in the civil war in 1990s. So where does he come from? From here, I have his a little bit about him published by USA Today. They say his name is Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed. Wartime Somalia selected or elected Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo, that's how they nicknamed him.
Yeah.
Farmajo, elected president Wednesday after two rounds of voting by members of parliament. Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, a former prime minister, won the presidency after two rounds of voting by members of parliament. He beat incumbent President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud, who conceded and avoided the need of third round. It's good that he conceded, and it's good that
he came to know that he's for Macho, he scored for the first round. He scored 80 something.
Okay.
And for the second round, he scored 184.
Okay.
So for the third, Hassan, you know, for the second round, Hassan Sheikh was around 90, something like that. So he realized that for the third, he will not score nothing almost.
Okay, that's a good one. That's a good one. And I'm glad that Hassan conceded. It's good that he did not do it the Yahya Jammeh way, where you concede today and then tomorrow you declare and you say, no, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And then the new president has a dual citizenship. That's a new thing. So at the age of 44, he has a dual citizenship, a U.S. citizenship. He has been living in Grand Island in New York and holds degrees from the State University of New York, Buffalo.
Yep.
He worked as a commissioner for equal employment at the New York State Department of Transportation in Buffalo.
Yep.
Farmajo had lived in the United States since 1985. That's why we don't know about him.
Yeah.
Since 1985, when he was sent there with Somalia's foreign affairs ministry. He was Somalia's prime minister for 8 months until leaving the post in 2011. Okay, now we know a little bit about him. The new president can travel to the United States on his U.S. passport, the Associated Press reported. Somalia was one of the nations listed in President Trump's January 27 executive order that temporarily banned travel from those countries. The ban was lifted by a federal judge, and that ruling is being appealed. and later it became that the appeal also was denied. That's the good news. And yeah, this is about him.
Yeah.
This is the guy.
Yeah.
He went to America in 1985.
Yeah.
So now, as a new president, Somalia is so divided. Hassan Sheikh has been there ever since. And the division did not stop. A lot of people are leaving the country in the fear of war. War has been going there ever since. But people are talking about Al-Shabaab, but there are other things that have nothing to do with Al-Shabaab. You see, the country has just been in war since 1991. So now, what are the expectations? What people expect of him? Because he should be reuniting all the voices. It doesn't matter where you come from within Somalia. So now, what are the expectations from the Somali community?
The expectations of the people of Somalia or the Somalis in New Zealand or elsewhere in the world are too high. Because this guy, he's been around the world and he's been with the community for so long. As you mentioned, he has a dual citizenship. That means he's been to USA for so long. And he went there as an asylum seeker. Yeah, as asylum seeker to USA in 19-something. I can't remember the time. So the reason he went as asylum seeker is because he was against the dictatorship of Siad Barre. Yeah, so he said something about the government, and he's been kicked out. He was listed as a wanted. So he went to USA and got the asylum seeker, and he's been accepted in there. And since then, you know, as you mentioned, that he has completed his bachelor degree in history. And then he also completed his master degree in political science. And then he worked as a case manager in there, and he did some other activities for the community in Buffalo, and also he helped a lot of refugee people. He had that kind of feeling or that he has to do something for the people of Somalia, and also as well as for the whole, you know, humanity, you know, because it matters. When you go through the process of a refugee or asylum seeker, or when you go through a process of immigration, then
because what I know, the guy did not go from Africa to New York direct. I think it was in some place, and then he knew that a big community, a Somali community, lives in New York, so he moved just to where the community is. I think the man has a community mindset.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's looking for.
Yeah. So he's been somehow an activist. He used to talk on the media. He used to talk, and he did some sort of strategic, a course relating to the U.S. strategic toward Somalia. In terms of terror, or in terms of, you know, so he helped through that process. So what you're asking me was the expectations of Somali people towards, from here and back home as well. Yeah, what the expectation is, as I said, is too high. The first thing that we are expect to do something about him is that the security. It matters, really. You know, the safety of the people or the nation of the Somalia. If there is no security or stability, you know, people cannot do anything. You cannot do business. You cannot study. You cannot, you know, go to work. Because you fear. You scare for your life. So that is one of the things that we need him to maintain and do something about. And as you mentioned also, there is a division. Too much division. Among the people of Somalia. So we want him to do, to unite the people and bring them together.
people lost their, you know, to trust each other. People fought each other because of tribalism, because of different ideology stuff. Because of, you know, some people, they were fighting for their life, you know. So so what we expect also is that the unity, as you mentioned, we also expect that people should have a justice. The law of the country is being destroyed, you know, so there is no law or constitutional judiciary system that's working or functioning in Somalia at the moment. So we wanted him to do something about that too. Like, if I have people, like, someone may come to you and say, this is my land, which belongs to you. So you have to go to court. If there is no any court, if there is no any police interference, if there is no any judiciary system, so what is going to happen? People can claim someone is, you know, Robert. So there's another thing, which is about the constitutional or the law of the country should come back. And he has to do that one too. The transparency is one of the issues. Some, you know, like USA or European countries were saying, like, the country is being corrupted and so on. Yeah. So, because the aid that goes to the country,
Somali ceiling is not working anymore because, you know, it has been deflated, and the only currency that's working now is U.S. dollars. So U.S. dollars in Somalia is a national currency. Yeah. See, things like that.
That's the smallest thing you can think about. So the transparency, I will mention later on that, you know, after the collapse, what happened and what went wrong. That is one of the things, the transparency, the constitutional, and the law of the country should come back, and he has to do something about. And also, as I mentioned, also getting rid of the corruption.
Yeah.
And the corruptionist, the people who do the corruption also should come to the court. And
I hope we will have a good heart to say that.
thanks, man. So, and fighting with the Al Shabaab also, another thing. It's a big thing also because they control most of the, you know, bush or forest land or whatever, because they cannot come, you know, directly outside. So they're hidden somewhere at the bush, and so he and the government should confront. So fighting with the terrorist group of Al-Shabaab and creating good neighboring with our neighbors, like Ethiopia, Kenya, South Sudan, and all the things. We have to, you know, we are all same. We are all African. We are East African nations. So somehow border issues are there. We know what is happening there. So, but we have to talk about creating a good neighboring and living together. So those are the expectations we expect from the new president.
We are talking about refugees in Somalia. President, the new president, Farmajo, that's his nickname, right?
Yep.
That's how people call him.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he won, what is the reaction, by the way, from the people, even here? What is the reaction? Because some may be surprised. Some maybe, you know, do not know what is going on. Some, I know. I have some Somali friends from United States. They start calling me. Hey, man, we start to have hope now because this guy has been one of us here, and is now the president of Somalia. I hope the business in Somalia will not be as usual. And I say, keep hope alive. Let's pray for him. I hope he will do something. So what is the reaction from Somali community here in New Zealand when they hear that?
Man, the reaction is were very fantastic. I remember, like, we started the reaction or celebrating even before he won. Some of us did not sleep that night because, you know, in Somalia it was a day and it was a night for us here in New Zealand. So what happened was, I remember I woke up at 1 o'clock, then I turned on the TV and was watching the news through live stream, and I went to YouTube live stream, something like that. So I was watching, and I was writing, you know, I was writing down the points, how many people he got, how many parliament MPs, you know, vote for him. So I was writing down, because I didn't want to come, Hassan Mahmoud to come back to the power again, because we wasted 4 years in his term. He did nothing much. So I was thinking, like, me and my friends in here in New Zealand were even chatting on Facebook, and I asked one guy who is in Hamilton, who was also in favor with Formaggio. I asked him, I lost my points. I was, because I got a call and some other stuff also, and some people are, you know, disturbing you and calling you, you know, to even some people, they're asking me, what are the points and how many votes he got and something like that. So I was counting for the first round when he was around 40, 50 votes when he got something like that. I was just thinking, like, I lost. And then I called the guy in the Hamilton and also said, you're disturbing me, don't call me back. So it was amazing. I remember, like, that night when he win, even, you know, the police of Somalia celebrated.
Yeah.
They came through because they were, you know, safeguarding. Yeah, the people and the police, you know, celebrating together because of the, you know, the hope and what they expect from this guy to do for. Because there are some Somali, you know, militaries and the police of Somalia not getting even their salaries. So imagine how you going to work and defend the country from Al-Shabaab or from any other terroristic groups if you're not getting, your salary. So the celebration was much, and we really, you know, it happened everywhere in the world.
Yes,
we did not celebrate together here in Auckland. We did not come that. But some other places, like the your friends in New York or in USA, they came together and they celebrated, and they had different guests talking about. So the celebration, the reaction was, we celebrated.
Yeah.
Thanks. With you guys, I know in Minneapolis, nobody sleep. That's the biggest Somali community. It's in Minnesota. I think nobody slept that day, because phone calls and parties and all of that. I hope he will come with a change. I hope he's going to make a difference.
Yeah.
So now, concerning is coming. There are a lot of work needs to be done, and refugee crisis in Kenya. So a few months ago, the Kenyan president came out with a statement that he does not need the Somali refugees to be in Kenya, especially the one in northern Kenya, in the Dadaab. So they will be deporting all the Somali refugees in the Dadaab. You know, the Dadaab is. The Dadaab is a large camp, the biggest camp, not only in Kenya, but they say in Africa. I know. I used to live there, Agadra, just a few kilometers. I think Agadra and the Dadaab is about 30 kilometers away.
Wow.
Yeah. Sometimes we will go and shop there and then come back. But you have to be escorted because there are shifter bandits on the way.
Wow.
Yeah. So you have to seek a military escort. And also you have to pay. So you have to pay the military escort if you want to go there.
Yeah,
because you never know, you might not make it back.
Yeah,
that's what it is. Yeah. So now this camp will be shut down.
So they're asking you, let the commander and let the
Pesa. let the Pesa. So that's what is happening. So there's a statement here. Kenya court has ruled the government decision to close down one of the world's largest refugee camps and encourage mostly Somali inhabitants to return home.
the court declared it unconstitutional, which is good. So the Kenyan president, his statement was reversed by the Kenya High Court, which is good. But now, this guy, Eric Rethi, is a government spokesman. So they say we will not stop the fight. So they will go forward to reverse the decision of the High Court. So now, a deportation will take place. And then the population of the Dab, we are talking about 580,000.
So what are the
580,000 Somali refugees in the Dab. All of them, they risk being deported.
Wow.
Yeah. Imagine, 580,000. And this is all the statistics. You don't know now, maybe they have reached 100,000. Because the way I know that come maybe is more than that. Mm. And the Kenya government says these people, Somali people, will be deported. And one of the reasons why they should be deported because the Dab is used by Al-Shabaab as a gateway or as a launching pad to fight the government of Kenya. Mm. So you remember those bombs in Garissa. Yeah, in Garissa University.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know how many people died there. And so Kenya responded, and it was a lot of mess. So Kenya came to the decision that those camps will be shut down.
That was the first part of an interview with Ibrahim Ali. We'll continue that interview in next week's program. We hope you can join us then. And in the meantime, we'd like to thank the many people involved in today's program. And to take us out, here's another group who will be playing at this year's Waiheke Jazz Festival. It's Nairobi Trio with Sacred Hill. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
For this week.
Take care until next Saturday,
same time, 10 to 5, on Planet FM 104.6.
And on the web, www.plantaudio.org.nz/resetter.